This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number money live from Las Vegas at the South Point Sportsbook Studios. We're back. A lot of college football, NFL to discuss this hour. Also following the latest in Major League Baseball. We'll update you on that in about 15 minutes. A couple of games going down to the wire. Dustin Sweetelson, our producer, found out he's got a sweat of a game he didn't even know he had.
So. Well, no, I'm sweating because the AC's broken.
Well, besides that, the sweats have been, you know. That was established about 2 minutes into the show. But alas, we're going to talk some college football right now. Big 12 also back in with a little Atlanta Falcons talk because our next guest, Dave Archer, a longtime coverer of both, works on the Atlanta Falcons, the radio broadcast network, also SiriusXM Big 12 radio host. Give him a follow at ArcherQB16, joins us right now. And Dave, the question everybody wants to know is, will this be the year that Texas finally does not underachieve and lives up to the preseason hype with a win total of 9.5. It continues to get bet to the over. Now -140. You have to lay if you think Texas win 10 games. What is your outlook on this Longhorn team heading into the year?
Well, I think it's a team that's certainly loaded on paper. There's no question about that. When you look at them from a talent standpoint, some of the transfers that have come in, the development of Quinn Ewers, the quarterback, and I think their improvement defensively, some of that personnel, some of that, you know, with coaching, with Pete Kwiatkowski, of course, in a combination with Gary Patterson a year ago, that the improvements Texas made along the – and then the recruitment of the big guys up front, they've fashioned themselves into a team on paper that looks like – and they were the favorite at Big 12 Media Days. All the media picked Texas to be the favorite, and they should be based on what you see on paper. But as it turns out, we don't play the game on paper. So it'll be the continued development of Quinn Ewers. If Quinn can take that next step, which I think he will, he's got a mass of people around him, both that have grown up in the Texas program and those that have been transferred in, that give Texas a pretty good outlook to step forward.
Dave, you can't talk about the Burnt Orange without talking about their rival, which is obviously Oklahoma north of the Red River. Second year there for Brent Venables, Dylan Gabriel back under center. Sooners did lose a lot of talent the last couple of years in terms of transfers and Mims going to the pros. But how do you look at Oklahoma on the offensive side of the ball and then, of course, defensively is where Venables really made his bones at Clemson and, of course, previously at OU?
Yeah, this will be a little bit more of an interesting OU team in the fact that I think Dylan Gabriel is an outstanding player at the quarterback position. They were a different football team with Dylan on the field. Just didn't have the backup power. Beeville, the guy that transferred in from, Pitt or someplace, he just wasn't very good. And subsequently they lost, 49-0 to their rival, Texas. That's not the case this year. They've got Jackson Arnold, a highly recruited kid that came in. He played extremely well in the spring. I think they're very solidified at the quarterback position, even if they had to hand it to the true freshman. It'll be interesting to see who steps up around Dylan Gabriel when it comes to the offensive side of the football, because we know that, you know, Eric Gray's gone, their 1,000-yard rusher. Marvin Mims has gone to the National Football League, their outstanding wide receiver. So it's going to be up to Farouk and a couple other receivers to step up around. Austin Stogner returns as their tight end. He's very familiar with the program, of course, because he was an Oklahoma Sooner and then spent a little time in South Carolina before coming back to OU. I think their offensive line will still be solid. Coach Beatenbow's outstanding when it comes to offensive line play. But the thing that gets lost about OU is they're a team that you think, okay, slings it all over the yard, and that's not really the case. When they're really good, they can run it. They got back to running the ball again last year after kind of an absentee when it came to the running game in 21. They got back to running the ball. They ran the ball for almost 220 yards a year ago. So that'll be something they'll need to do, even with Dylan Gabriel, a veteran quarterback, getting things done. The real questions for this team is not necessarily on the offensive side of the ball. It's on the defensive side. They've attacked that side. Brent Venables went out and got a lot of guys in free agency, if you will, the transfer portal. There's a number of players that slide in. Desan McCullough is the first guy that comes to mind out of Indiana. Outstanding, looks the part, edge rusher that looks like he could be an outside linebacker / edge rusher. He's just a sophomore, but a big kid. Their interior defensive line, they bolstered that with some another transfer in Rondell Bothroyd, who's going to step in. So they've got guys that kind of, Danny Stutzman, one of the better middle linebackers in the league. They're pretty solid in the secondary, but again, this is not a very good defensive unit last year, much to everybody's surprise with Venables being the head coach. But I think they're going to improve. How much they're going to improve, I mean, that's just, we have to wait and see what it looks like on the field.
Now we're talking Big 12 football right now with Dave Archer here on SiriusXM Big 12 Radio right now on Sharp Money. And I'm curious your thoughts, Dave, on the four newcomers into the conference where UCF, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston all now move over first full year of a full Big 12 conference slate. UCF, of those four, the only team with a win total of over six and with a sub 40-1 shot at least to win the conference at 35-1. How do you expect that transition goes for head coach and Gus Malzahn and the Golden Knights?
Well, I think that it's going to be a good one in the fact that they got John Rhys Plumlee, their quarterback, that returns. And he's got some transfers that have been in the program for a couple of years that are going to be around him. He's outstanding. He's got a really nice wide receiver core. The biggest thing for them is can they keep John Rhys Plumlee healthy? That was a problem a year ago. They had the ability to hand the ball to Isaiah Bowser, who was essentially a running quarterback, and he did some good things down in the red zone for them. But they're different when Plumlee's on the field. So if he can do that, he's a very talented guy, and I think he's going to help them a lot. But they've got some good outside receivers. I think they're better on defense than people think they are. The biggest transition for them will be playing a Power 5 roster or Power 5 schedule. So normally they would play a couple, three teams that were Power 5 teams, and then the rest of it was sprinkled in with their AAC compatriots or some of the smaller teams like these other teams play. But the depth, it becomes a glaring issue when you begin to have to run a gauntlet in a Power 5 conference. So I think that they're the most equipped to make some noise in the Big 12, but it'll be interesting to see if their depth is there to be able to handle battle of attrition that will inevitably take place.
Dave, which are some teams that intrigue you in this league outside of obviously Texas and OU at the top? Ben just asked you about UCF. Whether it's Kansas State, Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, who do you think could potentially be a team that challenges for the top of the league outside of the Big Two?
Yeah, I think K-State's ready to go. I think Chris Klieman's an outstanding coach. I think that they've got a veteran quarterback in Will Howard that found himself after taking over the job about halfway through the year, after Adrian Martinez was kind of banged up, and Will came in and really played well. They beat TCU in the Big 12 title game, their first Big 12 title in forever. And so they're poised with him coming back. Now they lose Deuce Vaughn. They lose Felix Ondike Azuma, their defensive end, who's an outstanding player. Those guys both went to the National Football League, but I think they've recruited well, and they've got and Klieman. I'm a big Klieman fan. I think that, you know, he won a number of national championships at the level just below at North Dakota State, and then here he is in what, his fourth year, and he guides them to a Big 12 title. So I think that coaching, and there's good coaching throughout this league, but I think that Klieman to me is one of those guys that maybe is a next level guy. Seems to communicate and seems to lock in with his players maybe better than some do. Another guy that would be in that same category is Joey McGuire at Texas Tech. I think that this is the year of the Texas Tech, and Zach Kittley's offense should catch fire. If they can get Tyler Shuck on the field, they're a different team. I think they're like 8-2 with Tyler Shuck as a starter. He showed the ability to run the football some last year, which I don't think anybody knew he could do. And they've got a talented young kid behind him in Baron Morton, but it's not really his time yet. If Shuck stays on the field, I think this is a group on offense. They return a ton of guys on the offensive side of the ball. All 11 starters from last year come back. And then the defense is kind of fixing some of the areas. Tyree Wilson off the National Football League after being a first-round draft pick. They'll need to fill that void. He had some 7 or 8 sacks a year ago for him. But I don't think they're necessarily laying in the weeds, guys. I think that I actually picked Texas and K-State to play for the Big 12 championship. So I think that Texas Tech is going to be in the mix as well.
Yeah, K-State trying to get back to that championship game after winning a season ago. In addition to covering the Big 12 for SiriusXM, Dave Archer, you can hear him on the Falcons radio network. Training camp now open, Dave. I'm sure you've been getting that early glimpse of what the Falcons will look like in 2023. You know, where we are out in Vegas, a lot of interest, a lot of respected money on the over from 7.5 to 8. Now it's 8.5, juiced over -120. You buying the Kool-Aid on this Atlanta team heading into the year?
Well, I like the team. I like what Terry Fontenot did in the offseason. They really attacked the defensive side of the football in free agency. There's a number of players that come over that have been successful in this league or guys that are kind of looking for a new lease on life. A couple of guys, Jeff Okuda and Mike Hughes, two guys who are former number one picks, come in and will play corner spots, potentially nickel corner. You could have A.J. Terrell, Mike Hughes, and Jeff Okuda on the field. All those guys are number one picks, and all they were highly regarded when they came out of high out of college. So I like the makeup of the defense. Now, they're going to have to show it on the field. It was not a team that was very good on third down a year ago, and they couldn't get after the passer. So that was what they were trying to attack with some of the free agency signs. On the offensive side of the football, it's just a young team. Drake London had a had an outstanding last year as a first-round pick out of USC. And Kyle Pitts, who was the year before, who had a really good year, actually went to the Pro Bowl as a rookie tight end. He tore his knee up, and so he's back on the field ready to go. And of course, the addition of Bijan Robinson and some of the versatility he brings, the Texas running back, it looks like there's a lot of weapons. You had Jonnu Smith to that, who played with Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator for in Tennessee. All of a sudden, you like a lot of the weapons. You know, Dez Ritter's going to have to take another step. Dez played the last four games of the year, the third-round draft pick out of Cincinnati. Big kid, athletic, got a great attitude, played 50 games in college, was 2-2 in his four games with the Falcons last year, and he looks solid. I like his makeup. I like his mentality, and I'm expecting Dez to have a really good year. So I'm the Falcon guy, so I'm
sure.
You know, I like the Falcons down the road. I like the Falcons all the way. So
give him a follow at Archer QB16. Played college football for Iowa State, played 8 years in the NFL, outstanding work as a SiriusXM Big 12 radio analyst and on the Atlanta Falcons radio network. Dave, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Good talking to you guys. Y'all take care.
Thank you.
Yeah, great insight there from Dave Archer. As we come back, update you on a little bit of baseball and also go into our three-point stance on this Wednesday.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding, drive too fast, and you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. It is over in the Twin Cities, Amal. Very good series between the Seattle Mariners and Minnesota Twins. We've made the case so many times. I know I have, at least on the show, for the Seattle Mariners to make a postseason run. Almost blew a 5-run lead late, but hang on. Andres Munoz the save for manager Scott Servais. 8-7 win. Take 2 or 3 from the Twinkies and the M's. I'm all 4 back of the Jays for the final wild card spot, still alive and kicking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, I think the series, they come from behind last night. They're down 6-2. They score 7 runs in the final 2 innings, win the game. They win this game 8-7. Hang on for dear life, because I think it was about 8-3 here, Ben. And then you see Minnesota make a push. They win the game. Can this be some positive momentum for them going forward? Some rains to be seen.
We shall see. Joe Ryan in Minnesota going down is about $1.60 consensus favorites today. So dog cashes. That one was way over the 8.5 total, which did get bet up about a run. And looks like them all. We also will see a swing at least of a game in that the division in the AL Central, where Twins coming into today, 3-game lead, but they go down. The Twins doing the Guardians up 8-3, really strong. Outing from Garrett Williams, the young starter. He's only made 4 or 5 starts now for Cleveland, but I've been really impressed with what I've seen out of him so far. Granted, it was Kansas City at home, but still, all Guardians today. They lead 8-3 with 1 out to get in the top of the 9th.
Yeah, this team, I still think they have an opportunity in this division simply because of their pitching compared to what you see with Minnesota, the inconsistency. Minnesota does have good frontline starting pitching, but it just doesn't seem to be consistent enough.
That's been the big issue for the most part, at least. That game, again, with Cleveland, as you would expect, taking on the Royals at home. Huge, huge favorite. About $2 consensus. That game did just go over, though, the 10 count. All right, let's go to our three-point stance. We're ready to go. And it's that time of year, Maul. It's early NFL training camp. You get a lot of comments from a lot of players. The one guy, though, that has been making himself very much heard throughout the offseason, now into training camp, Bills wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Here were the latest comments coming out of Bills training camp and Stephon Diggs earlier.
Obviously, the way we lost was just terrible in any regard. You know, you don't want to lose any game. But we've lost for a couple of years at this point. We've been trying to get over the hump, and obviously it caused for a lot of frustration. But all in all, like, as far as with that, I was here, but he did have a conversation. Me and him did have a conversation. It's all water under the bridge now. But I attribute it to, like, I mean, family matters. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't like dancing around things. I don't like those kind of questions. Black and white is everybody has family matters. We had a conversation. Everything is all as well. Water under the bridge. Now we back at work. And, you know, you know, I look at football, you know, it's kind of hard. It's a business at the end of the day. But when you go out there and you fight tooth and nail, you put a lot of sweat equity into this thing, it starts to feel like a family. So for me, I kind of keep everything in-house, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, we had those conversations. Everything that we needed to be said was said, and we talked it out as men, everybody involved.
I think sweat equity, he could fill right in as a VSiN host. So that's a great... It's a great line, Stephon Diggs. And the reality is, he's kind of made, you know, he's made the headlines himself. So it's sort of ironic to now, you know, poo-poo everything after you were the big storyline all summer.
Well, I think the fact that Buffalo failed to get to the Super Bowl last year, and many people halfway through the regular season thought they were the best team, not only in the AFC, but in the NFL. I think that's where you're seeing a lot of this. Also, look, the Bills are the story in Western New York. There's no question about it. And this is a team where you feel like the window might be changing. They lose Tremaine Edmonds. He goes to the Bears on the defensive side of the ball. That's a big loss. Where are they going to be offensively? The big question that always comes up is who's the second receiver? What's the consistency in the running game? Josh Allen does a tremendous job. But over to me, Ben, they need to find some other guys to step up besides Allen and Diggs.
Sure. And I just wonder, is this a year to kind of go against the grain? Remember going into last year, seemed like just about everybody in the sports betting space was all in on Buffalo.
Yeah.
All in. And they come out week one, just blast the LA Rams, and that only furthered the narrative. I can't find a single person who wants to buy in on Buffalo futures-wise. This is still a front seven, at least if you go to the defensive side, that I view as a top 10 unit. We're fifth defensively against the run, 11th against the pass last year. You still have a legitimate MVP candidate in quarterback Josh Allen. And it just kind of feels like this one offseason storyline has overshadowed everything else. That is, even though you mentioned some losses for the Bills, still a really good football team.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And I got to tell you, we're talking about Buffalo and treating the Bills like they're a 7-win team. And you're absolutely right. But to me, the problem is now, I mentioned the loss of Edmonds. You mentioned how good they are defensively. Can they find that consistency? And I don't know where you guys come out, but I think this is the toughest division in football. When you look at the AFC East, you've got Buffalo, the Jets. I know people are like, I don't know where you guys stand on New York. I love the Jets this year. I think the Jets have a legitimate shot. They're not one of the top three teams, but they're in that second tier to me behind KC, Cincinnati, and Buffalo. And with Aaron Rodgers, look, Burrow's great. Mahomes is great. But you're still – this is a four-time MVP. And Garrett Wilson's going to be a superstar. It's the question of can this offensive line deliver consistently guys like Mekhi Becton. If they can, I think they got a chance. And that's why I think some of the affinity for Buffalo is also, or the luster's kind of come off a little bit of Buffalo.
Sure. And look, all four teams in that division have six hardest strength of schedules based on their opposing win totals. Four of them come from the AFC East. So it's very realistic and logical, Maul. You can make that case. The only pushback I would look at is, remember last year in the AFC West where we had the similar conversation division-wide, and we went, man, is this going to be an impossible division?
Yeah.
Turned out not to be that all that great, largely because Las Vegas stunk and because Denver was just abysmal. Not that I expect between the Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, and Jets just any one, you know, two of those teams to be woeful this year, but I always hesitate trying to make those grand statements when we have all this time in the offseason to hype up certain divisions and sometimes it doesn't come to fruition.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and I think it's something you got to pay attention to, but right now the Bills are 5-1 to win the AFC, which it's an okay number. I still don't see them going to Cincinnati potentially in the playoffs and winning, or they've done it in Kansas City, but not during the postseason.
And that will be the big question
Going
forward. Speaking of teams trying to sustain what they have done in the past, part two of our 3-point stance. We had this tweet from Art Stapleton from covering the Giants camp. And we're Wednesday, July 26th. It only took till this point where we're getting the reports of how great guys look throwing to wide open guys in camp, and quarterback Daniel Jones report out on this. How good Daniel Jones looked in the first practice of training camp. I don't think I've ever seen him throw the ball harder was the exact quote that Art Stapleton. So congratulations, everybody. We did it. We waited this long to make sweeping statements about the arm strength of a quarterback who's had all offseason to rest.
You're absolutely right about that. But you do look at some of the things in terms of performance and how teams play, how guys perform. You start to get an idea. You get a gauge of it in terms of where they come out. So this would be interesting for me in terms of, can he take that next step forward?
Sure.
And that's the big question mark. I don't know. I'm not a believer in Daniel Jones, but maybe he proves me wrong this year. I know he had a good year last year. The Giants obviously thought he had a great year. I'm just not ready to kind of line up with that just yet.
I thought it was interesting that the reporter, he asked Cole Beasley if he agreed because Beasley caught one of the touchdown passes, and Beasley's like, yeah, I agree. Ton of heat on it. It's like, Cole Beasley, I mean, the fact, you know, your head is on straight. That is a a good accomplishment to be proud of. The fact that you held on to a football, good for you, man. Because I don't know how you're still in the league, but
neither
here nor there.
To be honest with you, I'm surprised Cole Beasley's on a roster.
That's my whole point. Dustin's giving me that look like he knows what I'm talking about.
Well, for Daniel Jones, what's fascinating about this as a Giants fan is that I'm very low on the Giants this year, just based on the obvious regressions that should take place after what happened a year ago with them and that incredible run they had into the postseason and beating Minnesota. But I'm not going to lie, I did get a little titillated by that tweet from Stapleton.
I knew you would.
The juices were flowing a bit because if you think about Daniel Jones, he basically didn't have a legitimate head coach his first couple of years in the NFL. It's his first off season where he already knows the offensive system, and now they can add more to it. And I trust this regime from GM to head coach and everyone in between, where now I'm like, maybe being low on the Giants with Saquon back in the mix and a better defense and some more weapons to throw to, maybe I'm wrong to be down on the Giants.
Here's the thing about Daniel Jones, though, you mentioned about the coaching. To me, if you're a great or an elite player, you're great or elite regardless of whether the fact that you've got Richie Kotite.
No, coordinators and systems. When you're a young quarterback, no, I don't agree with that. The bad coaching in the NFL has killed the careers of many talented quarterbacks. Inability to adjust, to adapt, to put systems around the skill set that player has. And the one thing I loved about what Daboll did last year is he played into Daniel Jones' strengths.
I love a good Rich Kotite mention. That's all I'll add to this.
One of the worst coaches ever.
Bubby Brewster, was that his quarterback?
This conversation.
Bubby Brister?
Brewster?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. The
Bubby.
Bubby, yeah, was there for a short time. Was in Pittsburgh previous to that. I get what you're saying, but I think guys just find ways to make plays. You may not be able to make all the plays. Your offense may not be flowing in a way that it would under a good coach. So I don't know. And to me, though, when I look at this Giants team, you've got they should make the playoffs simply because they're in a bad conference. The AFC's got about 10 teams that could potentially make the playoffs. The NFC's got realistically three, and then anybody else can make it. Well, I'm going to throw Minnesota in that mix, four teams.
Sure. Last time I checked, you've got seven playoff spots.
Yeah,
up for
exactly.
Grabs. One of those NFC teams, by the way, just going out here, the third of the three-point stance, where now that betting is so mainstream, I like that we get reporters asking coaches about win totals and stuff. And so Sean McVay was asked about his 6.5 win total, and he said, "They don't believe in us. Whatever I say, I'm going to get in trouble right now." I'm just picturing that in the McVay voice, just all jacked up, high-pitched energy. So how about you go, really, you really believe McVay? You're going to go 7-10? I don't know. We'll see in this upcoming season. Speaking of coaches talking to reporters, we have some sound from Big Ten Media Days. We'll get into that conference as we continue right here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. It's over at the Keg, Amal. 3-0 Milwaukee back on top by 1.5 over the Cincinnati Reds in the NL Central. How about this? Brewers only scored 9 runs in the series. 7 of them come in the 7th inning or later.
Wow. That's big time. We know the Reds have had some issues with the bullpen, and shows once again. So Milwaukee ends up taking what, 7 out of 9 or 6 out of 9?
So out of the All-Star break, yeah. Brewers win. It was 7 of 9, and yeah. For the season, that is now 10 of 13.
Wow.
From Cincinnati. Season series over. Brewers now I wouldn't say driver's seat, but a lot of people figured that this would be the stretch where Cincinnati took over the division. It did not happen that way.
Yeah, I still think Milwaukee's the better team. The offense is not on par with the Reds, but the pitching isn't. At the end of the day, pitching matters.
Absolutely.
By the way, Zach Gallen, 2 earned in the first 3 innings there.
Oh.
Versus St. Louis. Cardinals on top, middle of the third, 2-0. And maybe we could get a 4-run spot somehow, 4 earned against Gallen. And maybe you and I, Amal, our tickets on Blake Snell will feel a lot better tomorrow morning.
Hey, you're absolutely right about that. But I tell you what, Flaherty's always had that one hiccup of an inning, did a nice job of getting out of the first inning. Let's see if he can continue this. Diamondbacks have had runners on base in the first 2 innings so far.
Yeah, Flaherty threw about 30 pitches in the first inning, somehow got out of it.
I just need runs assigned to Zach Gallen.
Sure.
That's all I need.
Whatever it takes.
Him to be responsible for runs.
Was you think it was somebody, you encountered somebody on your way back to the studio in the sports book Dustin, it might have been it. You think maybe a Blake Snell, Cy Young holder, the way he was cheering profusely at every pitch?
Look, the South Point is a legendary sports book. It's one of the best places to watch a game in the city, if not the best. But the problem is, at every sports book, there are certain characters you run into. And the yelling about every moment of action of your bet guy is someone I just passed. As I was coming back from relieving myself in the restroom, I hear, "Let's go, 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 no, 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 oh!" And, like, I look up, and I'm like, what is he watching? Is he watching soccer or something? Or, like, even the TBT?
TBT.
He's yelling about baseball. And to me, there are certain sports, like, I don't like that because he's by himself. He wants everyone to look at him. And, by the way, if you make eye contact with a person like this, that is essentially engaging in a conversation, and it's impossible to disengage. They will follow you all the way to your car and talk to you about their bets. So you have to be careful. I just think that baseball is a sport you cannot be yelling about during any action plays. Like, I get it in football here and there. I get it in basketball here and there. But you cannot be yelling watching baseball.
Especially when it's in the third inning, like all the games are.
Yes.
Right now. I remember that the closest thing that happened to me was in the Venetian Sportsbook Guide, an 11-team parlay, NBA Summer League, WNBA, and he lost because a WNBA game stayed under by one and just was trying to tell everybody who would listen it was, you know, whatever, $5 to win 10 grand. And I'm like, I have no sympathy. You're betting on the Summer League and WNBA. Individually, fine, but 11 legs together, what are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. It's not even about the fact that it's Summer League and WNBA. It's the fact that it's 11 teams, right? I mean, that's
and
just
the urge to treat it like it's, you know, your own personal funeral space and just giving your monologue to everybody who walks by within a 15-foot radius. Anyway, speaking of monologues, like that transition to Mall? We go to Big Ten Media Days. We had the sound earlier, which was more in the fun line of and kind of making fun of the Charlotte head coach, Biff Poggi, with his team not getting covered. But a couple of teams, Mall, we'll talk about who are certainly getting plenty of coverage, some for good reasons, some for bad. Let's start with a team in Ohio State that is going to be here.
No, I was just going to say, before you run the clip, if you tell me what the question is, I can pretty much tell you what the Ryan Day answer is.
That's also fair. Well, we have a clip, so it must be interesting.
Yeah,
but
so yeah,
right, one of the co-favorites here in the Big Ten.
I don't know what the question was, but I can just give you a little synopsis of the clip without giving away too much. He was talking about his approach as being the man in charge of the Buckeyes program.
I think it'd be something like, well, you know, listen. I thought he was going to get asked actually a football question, being in charge. So we've got great coaches on our staff. You know, we've got great talent. We're going to try and do the best job we can. I mean, that guy, there's nobody more boring in an interview in college football than Ryan Day.
All right. Will I fall asleep in the next 30 seconds? Let's find out.
Do you have narcolepsy? Then yes.
The way that our staff's designed, you know, I think we have a great staff. And, you know, it has allowed me to jump around a little bit more. Once we get into the teeth of the season, I just, I know how it's going to go probably for me. I'm going to end up being right involved with it again. But that being said, as the season wears on, I have to be conscious this year of not getting too locked into the offense and making sure that I have, you know, a handle on everything that's going on. And I think, you know, certainly Brian running the offense and being a part of that and Justin Fry with the O-line, you know, some of the other additions we've had to the staff will allow us to do that.
You basically, at least the first sentence, I was like, I'm all nailed it.
Has he been accused of just focusing only on the offense and not looking at the defense as all that? It sounded like he was a little defensive about it.
Correct. And here's the other problem, though. I don't think he is as aggressive offensively as he should be, considering in his tenure, they've had the best offense in college football over the last 4 years. You know, the criticism that he's gotten is unwarranted. I saw somewhere someone said if he loses to Michigan, he's going to be fired. Well, Jim Harbaugh is 2-5 against Ohio State. Here's another thing I would point out. He lost to Clemson in a game where the controversial call, when Okuda knocked the ball out of the receiver's hands, and then you saw it was picked up and by Fuller and returned for a touchdown, didn't count. They lose to Michigan twice. They did lose to Oregon. I don't think they've lost to an unranked team. I mean, the success that he's had, he's lost two games in Big Ten play in 4 years. The problem in college football, whether it's Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, USC, the fan bases are just completely delusional, right? Like, if you don't go, you know, Ohio State has a streak of scoring 21 points. They've scored 21 points in every game he's been the head coach. It's really insane to me how people are like, well, he can't beat Michigan. Michigan's got a great football team. I know people don't want to hear that in Columbus or in other parts of Ohio or Buckeye fans. They got a great, great football team. If Blake Corum plays, they probably beat TCU and they score on that opening drive. Yeah, the quarterback play hasn't been there. So I don't understand the criticism. It's completely unwarranted.
What's more ridiculous, Jim Harbaugh as head coach getting the suspension for the reasons he got it, or the fact that that sports bettors out there are betting East Carolina +35 in the hook like they know the final score, and that somehow Michigan is not going to be able to just wipe the face off of a bad Pirate team at the Big House?
I tell you what, 35.5 is a big number. But in the first half, Michigan's probably, if it's less than 21, the Wolverines would be up. I think Michigan has a chance this year legitimately to win the national title if J.J. McCarthy can deliver. Everywhere else, I think they're solid. I shouldn't say solid. They are very good to great. The receivers, they don't have great receivers, but you don't need great receivers. You need guys just to make plays. Colston, Loveland Colston, the tight end they've got, really good one there. This is a good football team. If they can win at Penn State on November 11th and beat Ohio State November 25th, this team has a chance to run the table and go undefeated.
Sure. Co-favorites right now, Michigan and Ohio State in the Big Ten, about +165 at DraftKings. How about a team on the other end of the spectrum? A lot of questions being asked about Northwestern's program, where they will be at, and the new head coach, David Braun, was asked about, all right, how do you approach things heading into a year with so many off-the-field distractions?
I dreamt of playing in the Big Ten. That never became a reality, but an opportunity to work in the Big Ten, coach in the Big Ten, and coach and mentor these young men is something that I don't take lightly. I vividly remember in 1995 watching Northwestern beat ninth-ranked Notre Dame. Incredible. It still sticks with me to this day. The following year, I'm sitting in the stands with a childhood friend watching Northwestern take on Wisconsin. In improbable circumstances, Ron Dayne fumbles with under a minute left to go. A few plays later to find Steve Schnur connect with Dwayne Bates on a double move and one of the most improbable Northwestern wins in Northwestern history. Again, this opportunity is a dream come true to be a part of Big Ten football.
I think if I was being grilled and being asked to deflect on something, I would definitely bring up Ron Dayne and you know, Steve Schnur is great talking points to just sort of deflect any real conversation. Nice speech. That was a really good speech.
Tell you one thing. I thought I was going to take a nap. I mean, that guy was not exactly a bastion of entertainment or excitement.
The vibe I was wondering, I was torn because I was like, oh man, this guy sounds really passionate about this opportunity. And at the same point, I was like, yeah, I would be too if it was something I was not ready for and probably wasn't going to happen in some time in the next 5 to 7 years for me. Like, he's in over his skis.
Well, let's see what happens from a coaching standpoint. I don't worry about guys in terms of the press conference. Not everybody's strength is in public speaking or where they're comfortable in front of the microphone. So that I'm not going to criticize. But I think it's a great opportunity, right? By the way, he's from your home state, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Winona, Wisconsin?
Wales is awesome. Winona State, great D2 school in Minnesota. Winona State.
But you look at a Northwestern, to me, is a program with deep pockets from an alumni base. You can really do well. They're a beautiful campus. They've got a great football facility. Welsh Ryan, I mean, if they'd maybe cut the grass once a year, might be a little bit more attractive to guys that have a little bit of speed.
I've been there once. Tyrell Sutton ran for like 300 yards in a 52-48 win over, I believe it was Jim Sorgi's Wisconsin Badgers. John Stocko's Wisconsin Badgers.
I have not been to Welsh Ryan. That's one of the few places in the Big Ten I've not been.
Interesting.
Well, you can't win there. You can't win at Vanderbilt. You can't win at Georgia Tech.
It was one of the weirder.
You can't win at Georgia Tech. Bobby Dodd won a national title. Bobby Ross won a national title in 1990.
Yeah. Don't do the math on how long ago 1990 was.
Let's go to commercial.
That's probably a fair statement. We'll wrap up the next hour of VSiN Sharp Money right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide drops next week. Get previews and predictions for every Division I team and conference, best bets on futures and season win totals, plus an in-depth breakdown of how you can use our betting splits and power rankings to make you a smarter better this season. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Remember, this offer ends July 31st in just a few days, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe to take advantage of these special offers and become part of the Sports Betting Network. We'll have some Pac-12 football to talk about with Jordan Watkins in 15 minutes, a little more NFL with the former head coach Jay Gruden in about 45 here on Sharp Money. I'm going to play some Dead or Alive right now, Amal. We didn't get to the Kirk Ferentz soundbite, though, from Iowa, which I kind of want to hear, Dustin, if we have that pulled
we
up, just
can
because
tee it up because I love him.
Anything to do with punting and Iowa, it's a match made in heaven.
Absolutely right. I'm surprised this team doesn't punt on first down. It'd be better for their defense because then they wouldn't lose yardage on offense.
What are you talking about? The punter is like the second best offensive weapon and defensive weapon on this team.
Why is he only the second best?
Well, because they still have a running back. They still believe in the running back.
They do, but it's kind of hard when the entire defense knows in the first and that second down play you're going to run the ball.
Yes. Yeah, so I guessed at Media Days, Kirk Ferentz was asked about their punter, Torrey Taylor. He's a senior, and I guess he's really good at punting. You would assume so, because this is the soliloquy that Kirk Ferentz went on about punting and his punter when he was asked about him.
You know, I really kind of learned the importance of a great punter in 1981, my first year ever at Iowa. And we were fortunate to have Reggie Roby, I believe, as a junior that year, as amazing punter as I've ever seen. So his leg was a big part of the reason we were Big Ten champions that year and played in the Rose Bowl. And then certainly playing and coaching in pro football really developed an appreciation for how punters can affect and impact the game. And, you know, we're built, you know, we're kind of a defensive oriented outfit, if you will. And the value of having a great kicking game along with a good, you know, solid defense gives you an opportunity maybe to have a little bit more success that way. So when we have a player with Torrey's capabilities and talents, you know, we're certainly going to try to utilize that in a smart way.
I love it. You know, for the immaculate grid, sickos like Dustin and I love a good Reggie Roby mention. If you ever get Tampa Bay, Miami in your grid.
It's a good Paul. But like, guys, Amal, you made the mistake of thinking 1990 was recent before the last segment ended.
33 years ago.
I don't blame you. I talk about 1995 when I was 10 as if it was 7 years ago. So I get it. But here's the thing. It's 2023 year of our Lord. When does Iowa embrace the forward pass?
Well, I was just getting ready to comment on that. By the way, Chris Doering was very confident in talking about 1995 yesterday with us. So don't give me a hard time about the 90s. Here's what I don't understand. He was on Hayden Fry's staff from 1981 to 1989. Hayden Fry was a tremendous coach. Iowa was ranked number one or number two in the country in 85 with Chuck Long, who was a Heisman finalist. They had a great offense, Ronnie Harmon on that team. How is it? And all this time as the head coach of the Hawkeyes, you are so anti-offense. Don't tell me you can't win in Iowa City. Why are they so opposed to sitting there and saying, you know what, guys, let's make some plays. They had Tim Dwight on the perimeter. They've had some good offensive skilled guys in the past. We know the tight ends that have come out of Iowa. Why does this team just sit there and say, no, you know what, we're going to try and beat Ohio State outside of that one game where Haskins was terrible in Iowa City. Why do you sit there and think you're going to win games in today's day and age by scoring 21 points and holding the opponent to 20? It's like walking around saying, yeah, man, I got all my information on my Palm Pilot. What, are you kidding me?
I mean,
the
like
Palm Pilot. Yeah, that's great.
But like
Palm Pilot.
Do you guys have these teams where no matter what happens, you're always on the wrong side of them? When I think Iowa's good, they stink. When I think Iowa stinks, they somehow win. Like, I don't, like going back to Ricky Stanzi, like, bad things always happen when I bet on Iowa. I just generally have to avoid their games because I never have a vibe for what they are because you just never know what you're getting.
I'm still mad that Iowa beat Missouri in the 2010 Insight Bowl. I'm still fuming about that. Anyway.
How about the game against LSU in the, I think it was like 05 Capital One Bowl? Drew Tate saves their bacon. They didn't even use the timeout. And the last play of the game, somehow LSU's defense allows two receivers to get deep and they win the game. But it's just the ineptitude that's been there with Kirk Ferentz's team. And then his son, Brian Ferentz, the offensive coordinator, has been so bad. The Hawkeyes and their fan base, they have tremendous fan support. The fact that they have been given this ineptness in offense, you mentioned Ricky Stanzi and some of these other guys. When you watch a Hawkeyes game, you know how good the defense is going to be. You'll see a receiver wide open. You're like, dude, they're going to get a 20-yard pass. No shot. Ball is thrown about 17 yards. The receiver's looking around like, dude, why the hell did I choose to come here to play receiver?
Yeah, it looks like someone's playing out of position at quarterback.
Exactly.
Basically. 8 is the win total. It's juiced over, minus 145. And the best thing you can say for Iowa is the fact that they avoid Ohio State and Michigan on the schedule this year.
They do. Once again, that's a huge benefit. They're at State College, so I think it could be a loss. When you mention the 8, it's going to be a balance of can you win in Ames? Always a rivalry game in the Cy-Hawk series. At State College, I mentioned, they should beat Michigan State at Purdue at home. They got to go to Wisconsin, another tough game now that Luke Fickell takes over. Braylon Allen, in my opinion, the best running back in college football. Minnesota is always tough. That's the Floyd of Rosedale, isn't that? Iowa-Minnesota, that's always a great rivalry matchup. At Nebraska, another tough one at the end of the year. One, two, three. Over eight is juiced.
Minus 145, too.
I can't play it. I think they're right about eight wins. I don't know if they get the nine. I think they lose at Wisconsin. I think they lose at Penn State. Nebraska, Minnesota, and Iowa State, they've got to go 2-1 in those games to get over.
We will see. All I know is the last time we're talking about punting so much with that Kirk Ferentz clip. Remember reading the recently released David Marinus book on the life of Jim Thorpe? Great book. That's the last time I can remember seeing the word punting used in such a vociferous state was David Marinus's outstanding book on a guy who played football in the 20s.
This guy's showing off here, isn't he?
He knows how to read.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
I try to read a book a month. What's wrong with that?
A book a month? I only read on the toilet, so that means I've got to eat more fiber
Justin,
a month.
For Immaculate Grid purposes, reading like a sports book a month. So I'm reading do you ever read Ball 4, the Jim Boughton book in 1969 that became super famous because it was like an inside locker, like the first book that was like inside the locker room, and the commissioner, Bowie Kuhn, basically tried to blacklist him. Really interesting book, actually, even 50 years later.
I believe you. My philosophy on reading is if it's going to be something in the self-help or self-improvement category, otherwise I don't have an interest in reading about history. I just read something on Wikipedia in about 10 minutes. I'm like, I'll summarize it. He was criticizing me because I do that with movies. I'll start a movie and I'm like, let me read the premise of this. Let me see if it's worth wasting 90 minutes to 220 minutes. And then I said, it's not worth it. I got the synopsis of it.
Yeah. I just thought I'd point that out.
I'm impressed that you read a
punting comp, but
I was more impressed that you read a book a month.
We go up to, you have the lake in Wisconsin, you're doing your NFL college football prep, and then you're doing a little reading. It's summer. Get a summer shandy. Drive past.
What is a summer shandy?
That's a great beer from Leinenkugel.
I apologize. Okay. The way Sean answered you and Dustin answered, it was like I asked, what is a Miller Lite?
It's okay, summer shandy.
It's good. I will say Spotted Cow has kind of become overrated, though.
Stop!
Everybody talks about Spotted Cow like it is God's gift from the Wisconsin heavens.
Ben, I had Spotted Cow one time in 2009. And I haven't stopped thinking about it since.
Well, here's the question. Why have you not had one since?
It's illegal to sell outside of the state of Wisconsin.
It's a beer that's brewed in Wisconsin.
Minnesota bars have been fined for selling it illegally.
Bars in New York City have been shut down because they would drive out with trucks and vans, fill up with cases of Spotted Cow, and drive back across the country, and they get in trouble for it.
So why is it illegal to sell outside of the state of Wisconsin?
Ask the New Glarus Brewing Company.
They want it as a Wisconsin thing, a Wisconsin specialty.
It's what Culver's used to be before they sold out.
Okay, can we get some references that I know? What the hell is Culver's?
Fast food that I've never had either, so. Which is believe me, if there's a fast food that I haven't had, it's definitely
Culver's.
Where's the nearest one?
The double deluxe bacon cheese butter burger with a concrete mixer? Oh, my God.
Does that come with a cardiologist?
You know what this body looks like? It needs a little bit more butter and beef together.
Yeah. Is Culver's a Wisconsin thing?
Yes. It's a butter burger. Yes. Butter burgers are their staple.
What's the place in Canada that's very famous?
Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons, thank you.
It's coffee and donuts, though.
No. My point was, give me some place that, at least I know. Culver's? Come on. I've only been to Wisconsin twice.
Okay.
Vegas is getting a Whataburger. You could try their fries.
I know Whataburger. They're from Texas. They're open 24 hours in Texas. That's why everybody knows them.
I'm sick of people comparing them to In-N-Out. They're not even in the same class. It's like comparing Iowa to Ohio State's offense.
In-N-Out, and I'm so happy because I used to live close to In-N-Out here in Vegas. Thank God they have the worst fries ever. They should be banned from making French fries.
I agreed with that for a while. I've grown to appreciate the simplicity of them. I don't know why.
It doesn't change the fact that their fries are terrible.
Well, if you're waiting in a 30-car line every time, you expect a little bit more bang for your buck on the
How
fry
the hell
front.
Do people do that? Are these people going to live forever? How do you have that kind of time to wait for an item that you're going to eat in 4 minutes for 30 minutes?
The fact that you could drive by In-N-Out at 11 a.m., 3 p.m., 6 p.m., 10 p.m., and it's the same line. Same line with the exact same cards every time.
Well, don't go inside and think you're going to cheat the line. It takes just as long.
By the way, this segment was great. This entire segment was nonsense, just like the Iowa offense.
Thank you. That's what we were trying to circle.
See,
it back
we didn't
towards.
Punt on it.
Hey-o. 8 on the win total for Iowa. Hard pass. exactly. Me in 2023. We'll talk some Pac-12 football as we start our final hour of Sharp Money with Jordan Watkins right after this.